Listen and Live Audio presents The Worst Case Scenario Survival Handbook by Joshua Piven and David Borgenick. Read by Burt Reynolds. Copyright 1999 by Book Soup Publishing Incorporated. All rights reserved. First published by Chronicle Books, San Francisco, California. Warning. When a life is imperiled or a dire situation is at hand, safe alternatives may not exist. To deal with the worst-case scenarios presented in this book, we highly recommend, insist actually, that the best course of action is to consult a professionally trained expert. Do not attempt to undertake any of the activities described in this book yourself. But because highly trained professionals may not always be available when the safety of the individuals is at risk, we have asked experts on the various subjects to describe the techniques they might employ in those emergency situations. The publishers, authors, and experts disclaim any liability from any injury that may result from the use, proper or improper, of the information contained in this book. All the information in this book comes directly from experts in the situation at hand, but we do not guarantee that the information contained herein is complete, safe, or accurate, nor should be considered a substitute for your good judgment and common sense. And finally, nothing in this book should be construed or interpreted to infringe on the rights of other persons or to violate criminal statutes. We urge you to obey all laws and respect all rights, including property rights of others. The authors. Preface. Anything that can go wrong will. Murphy's Law. Be prepared. The Boy Scout motto. The principle behind this book is a simple one. You just never know. You never really know what curves life will throw at you, and what is lurking around the corner, what is hovering above, what is swimming beneath the surface. You never know when you might be called upon to perform an act of extreme bravery and to choose life or death with your own actions. But when you are called, we want you to be sure that you know what to do, and that is why we wrote this book. We want you to know what to do when the pilots pass out and you have to land the plane. We want you to know what to do when you see the shark fin heading towards you. We want you to know how to make fire in the wilderness without any matches. We want you to know what to do in these and in dozens of other life-threatening situations, from being forced to jump from a bridge, to being forced to jump from a car, from taking a punch correctly, to outsmarting a charging bull, and from escaping a sniper to treating a bullet wound. We were not survival experts ourselves when we undertook this project. Just regular, everyday folk like you. Joshua grew up in the East, a street-smart city boy. David grew up in the West and spent his youth hiking and camping and fishing, even though his family used a Volkswagen van most of the time. We were just a couple of inquisitive journalists from different backgrounds who worried a lot and were interested in knowing how to survive a variety of crisis situations, likely or unlikely, mostly the latter. Together, we consulted experts in a variety of fields to compile the handbook you have before you. The information in this book comes directly from dozens of expert sources: stuntmen, physicians, EMT instructors, bomb squad officers, bullfighters, survival experts, scuba instructors, demolition derby drivers, locksmiths, skydivers, alligator farmers, marine biologists, and avalanche rescue patrol members, to name a few. Within this book, you will find simple step-by-step instructions for dealing with 40 life and limb threatening situations. We've also provided other essential tips and information that you must know. Any and each of them could save your life. Ever wonder how you would deal with the kinds of situations that usually only come up when you are a movie action hero? Well, now you can find out. And then, like the Boy Scouts, you too will be prepared. So keep this book on hand at all times. It is informative and entertaining, but useful too. Get a copy and keep it in your glove compartment. Take it with you when you travel. Give a copy to your friends and loved ones, because the Boy Scouts know what they're talking about. And you just never know. Joshua Piven and David Borgonit. Chapter 1. Great Escapes and Entrances. How to Escape from Quicksand. 1. When walking in quicksand country, carry a stout pole. It will help you get out should you need to. 2. As soon as you start to sink, lay the pole on the surface of the quicksand. 3. Flop on your back on top of the pole. After a minute or two, equilibrium in the quicksand will be achieved and you will no longer sink. 4. Work the pole to a new position under your hips and at right angles to your spine. The pole will keep your hips from sinking as you slowly pull out first one leg and then the other. 5. Take the shortest route to firmer ground, moving slowly. How to avoid sinking. Quicksand is just ordinary sand mixed with upwelling water, which makes it behave like a liquid. However, quicksand, unlike water, does not easily let go. If you try to pull a limb out of quicksand, you have to work against the vacuum left behind. Here are a few tips. The viscosity of quicksand increases with shearing. Move slowly so the viscosity is as low as possible. Floating on quicksand is relatively easy and is the best way to avoid its clutches. You are more buoyant in quicksand than you are in water. Humans are less dense than fresh water, and salt water is slightly more dense. Floating is easier in salt water than fresh water, and much easier in quicksand. Spread your arms and legs far apart and try to float on your back. How to break down a door. Interior doors. 1. Give the door a well-placed kick or two to the lock area to break it down. Running at the door or slamming against it with your shoulder or body is not usually as effective as kicking with your foot. Your foot exerts more force than your shoulder, and you will be able to direct this force towards the area of the locking mechanism more succinctly with your foot. Alternate method, if you have a screwdriver. Look on the front of the doorknob for a small hole or keyhole. Most interior doors have what are called privacy sets. These locks are usually installed on bedrooms and bathrooms and can be locked from the inside when the door is shut, but have an emergency access hole in the center of the door handle which allows entry to the locking mechanism inside. Insert the screwdriver or probe into the handle and push the locking mechanism or turn the mechanism to open the lock. Exterior doors. If you are trying to break down an exterior door, you will need more force. Exterior doors are of a sturdier construction and are designed with security in mind for obvious reasons. In general, you can expect to see two kinds of latches on the outside doors. A passage or entry lock set for latching, and a deadbolt lock for security. The passage set is used for keeping the door from swinging open and does not lock. The entry lock set utilizes a dead latch that can be locked before closing the door. 1. Give the door several well-placed kicks at the point where the lock is mounted. The exterior door usually takes several tries to break down this way, so keep at it. Alternate method, if you have a sturdy piece of steel. Wrench or pry the lock off the door by inserting the tool between the lock and the door and prying back and forth. Alternate method, if you have a screwdriver, hammer, and awl. Remove the pins from the hinge. If the door opens towards you, then force the door open from the hinge side. Get a screwdriver or an awl and a hammer. Place the awl or screwdriver underneath the hinge with the pointy end touching the end of the bolt or screw. Using the hammer, strike the other end of the awl or the screwdriver until the hinge comes out. Assessing amount of force required. Interior doors in general are of a lighter construction than exterior doors and usually are thinner, 1 3/8 inches thick to 1 5/8 inches thick, than exterior doors, which generally are 1 3/4 thick. In general, older houses will be more likely to have solid wood doors, while newer ones will have the cheaper hollow core models. Knowing what type of door you are dealing with will help you determine how to break it down. You can usually determine the construction and solidity of the door by tapping on it. Hollow core. This type is generally used for interior doors, since it provides no insulation or security and requires minimal force. These doors can often be opened with a screwdriver. Solid wood. These are usually oak or some other hardwood and require an average amount of force and a crowbar or other similar tool. Solid core. These have a softwood inner frame with a laminate on each side and a chipped or shaved wood core and require an average amount of force and a screwdriver. Metal clad. These are usually softwood with a thin metal covering and require average or above average force and a crowbar. Hollow metal. These doors are of a heavier gauge metal that usually has a reinforcing channel around the edges and the lock mounting area and are sometimes filled with some type of insulating material. These require maximum force and a crowbar. How to break into a car. Most cars that are more than 10 years old have vertical push-button locks. These are locks that come straight out of the top of the car door and have rods that are set vertically inside the door. These locks can be easily opened with a wire hanger or a Slim Jim or picked as described below. Newer cars have horizontal locks which emerge from the side of the car door that are attached to horizontal lock rods. These are more difficult to manipulate without a special tool but can also be picked. How to break into a car with a hanger. 1. Take a wire hanger and bend it into a long J. 2. Square off the bottom of the J so that the square is 1.5 to 2 inches wide. 3. Slide the hanger into the door between the window and the weather stripping. Open the door by feel and by trial and error. Feel for the end of the button rod, and when you have it, pull it up and open the lock. How to break into a car with a Slim Jim. 1. A Slim Jim is a thin piece of spring steel with a notch in one side which makes it easy to pull the lock rod up. They can be purchased at most automotive supply stores. Slide the tool gently between the window and the weather stripping. Some cars will give you only 1/4 inch of access to the lock linkage, so go slowly and be patient. 2. Do not jerk the tool trying to find the lock rod. This can break the lock linkage, and on auto locks, it can easily rip the wires in the door. 3. Move the tool back and forth until it grabs the lock rod, and then gently move it until the lock flips over. How to pick a car lock. 1. You will need 2 tools. One to manipulate the pins or wafers inside the lock core, and one to turn the cylinder. You can use a small Allen wrench to turn the lock and a long bobby pin to move the pins and wafers. Keep in mind that many car locks are harder to pick than door locks. They often have a small shutter that covers and protects the lock, and this can make the process more difficult. 2. While the bobby pin is in the lock, exert constant and light turning pressure with the wrench. This is the only way to discern if the pins or wafers, which line up with the notches and grooves in the key, are lined up correctly. Most locks have 5 pins. 3. Move the bobby pin to manipulate the pins or wafers until you feel the lock turn smoothly. Alternate method? Use a key from a different car from the same manufacturer. There are surprisingly few lock variations, and the alien key may just work. Be aware, we of course assume you are seeking to enter your own car. How to hotwire a car. Hotwiring a car without the owner's permission is illegal, except in repossessions. Hotwiring can be dangerous. There is a risk of electrical shock. Hotwiring will not work in all cars, particularly cars with security devices. Some kill switches can prevent hotwiring. 1. Open the hood. 2. Locate the coil wire. It is red. To find it, follow the plug wires which lead to the coil wire. The plug and the coil wires are located at the rear of the engine on most V8s. On six-cylinder engines, the wires are on the left side near the center of the engine, and on four-cylinder engines, they are located on the right side near the center of the engine. 3. Run a wire from the positive plus side of the battery to the positive side of the coil, or the red wire that goes to the coil. This step gives power to the dash, and the car will not run unless it is performed first. 4. Locate the starter solenoid. On most GM cars, it is on the starter. On Fords, it is located on the left side, passenger side, fender well. An easy way to find it is to follow the positive battery cable. You will see a small wire and the positive battery cable. Cross the two with a screwdriver or pliers. This cranks the engine. 5. If the car has a standard transmission, make sure it is in neutral and the parking brake is on. If it has an automatic transmission, make sure it is in park. 6. Unlock the steering wheel using a flat blade screwdriver. Take the screwdriver and place it at the top center of the steering column. Push the screwdriver between the steering wheel and the column. Push the locking pin away from the wheel. Be very firm when pushing the pin. It will not break. How to perform a fast 180-degree turn with your car. From reverse. 1. Put the car in reverse. 2. Select the spot straight ahead. Keep your eyes on it and begin backing up. 3. Jam on the gas. 4. Cut the wheels sharply 90 degrees around a quarter turn as you simultaneously drop the transmission into drive. Make sure you have enough speed to use the momentum of the car to swing it around, but remember that going too fast, greater than 45 miles per hour, can be dangerous and may flip the car and strip your gears. Turning the wheel left will swing the rear of the car left. Turning it right will swing the car right. 5. When the car has completed the turn, step on the gas and head off. From drive. 1. While in drive or forward gear, accelerate to a moderate rate of speed. Anything faster than 45 miles per hour risks flipping the car. 2. Slip the car into neutral to prevent the front wheels from spinning. 3. Take your foot off the gas, turn the wheel 90 degrees, a quarter turn, while pulling hard on the emergency brake. 4. As the rear swings around, return the wheel to its original position and put the car back into drive. 5. Step on the gas to start moving in the direction from which you came. Be aware, the 180-degree turn while moving forward is more difficult for the following reasons. It is easier to swing the front of the car around because it is heavier and will move faster with momentum. It is harder to maintain control of the rear of the car. It is lighter and will slip more easily than the front. Spinning out of control or flipping the car are potential dangers. Road conditions can play a significant role in the success and safety of this maneuver. Any surface without sufficient traction, dirt, mud, ice, gravel, will make quick turns harder and collisions more likely. How to ram a car. Ramming a car to move it out of your way is not easy or safe, but there are some methods that work better than others, and some that will minimize the damage of your vehicle. Keep in mind that the best way to hit a car blocking your path is to clip the very rear of it, about 1 foot from the rear bumper. The rear is the lightest part of a car, and it will move relatively easily. Hitting it in the rear can also disable the car. With a rear wheel crushed, you have time to get away without being pursued. 1. Disable your airbag if you can. It will deploy on impact and will obstruct your view after it deploys. 2. Wear a seatbelt. 3. Accelerate to at least 25 miles per hour. Do not go too fast. Keeping the car at a slow speed will allow you to maintain control without slowing down. Then, just before impact, increase your speed to greater than 30 miles per hour to deliver a disabling crunch to the rear wheel of the obstacle car. 4. Ram the front passenger side of your car into the obstacle car at its rear wheel at a 90-degree angle. The cars should be perpendicular. 5. If you are unable to hit a car in the rear, go for the front corner. Avoid hitting the car squarely in the side. This will not move it out of the way. 6. The car should spin out of your way, hit the gas, and keep moving. How to escape from a sinking car. 1. As soon as you hit the water, open your windows. This is your best chance of escape, because opening the door will be very difficult given the outside water pressure. To be safe, you should drive with the windows and doors slightly open whenever you are near water or driving on ice. Opening the windows allows water to come in and equalize the pressure. Once the water pressure inside and outside the car is equal, you will be able to open the door. 2. If your power windows won't work or you cannot roll your windows down all the way, attempt to break the glass with your foot or shoulder or a heavy object such as an anti-theft steering wheel lock. 3. Get out. Do not worry about leaving anything behind unless it is another person. Vehicles with engines in front will sink at a steep angle. If the water is 15 feet or deeper, the vehicle may end up on its roof upside down. For this reason, you must get out as soon as possible while the car is still afloat. Depending on the vehicle, floating time will range from a few seconds to a few minutes. The more airtight the car, the longer it floats. Air in the car will quickly be forced out through the trunk and cab, and an air bubble is unlikely to remain once the car hits bottom. Get out as early as possible. 4. If you are unable to open the window or break it, you will have one final option. Remain calm and do not panic. Wait until the car begins filling with water. When the water reaches your head, take a deep breath and hold it. Now the pressure should be equalized inside and outside, and you should be able to open the door and swim to the surface. How to avoid breaking through the ice. Cars and light trucks need at least 8 inches of clear, solid ice on which to drive safely. Driving early or late in the season is not advisable. Leaving your car in one place for a long period of time can weaken the ice beneath it, and cars should not be parked or driven close together. Cross any cracks at right angles and drive slowly. New ice is generally thicker than old ice. Direct freezing of lake or stream water is stronger than refreezing, freezing of melting snow, or freezing of water bubbling up through cracks. If there is a layer of snow on the ice, beware. A layer of snow insulates the ice, slowing the freezing process, and the snow's weight can decrease the bearing capacity of the ice. ice near the shore is weaker. River ice is generally weaker than lake ice. River mouths are dangerous because the ice near them is weaker. Carry several large nails in your pocket and a length of rope. The nails will help you pull yourself out of the ice, and the rope can be thrown to someone on more solid ice or can be used to help someone else. How to deal with a downed power line. High-voltage power lines, which carry power from plants and transformers to customers, can come crashing down during severe storms. If you are in a car when a pole or a line falls, you are much safer remaining inside a grounded vehicle than being on foot. If the wire falls on the car, do not touch anything. Wait for help. 1. Assume that all power lines, whether sparking or not, are live. 2. Stay far away from downed lines. Current can travel through any conductive material, and water on the ground can provide a channel from the power line to you. An electrical shock can also occur when one comes in contact with the charged particles near a high voltage line. Direct contact is not necessary for electrocution to occur. Never touch a vehicle that has come in contact with a live wire. It may still retain a charge. 3. Do not assume that a non-sparking wire is safe. Often power may be restored by automated equipment, causing a dead wire to become dangerous. Stay away from downed lines, even if you know they are not electric lines. The lines could have come in contact with an electric line when they fell, causing the downed line to be hot. 4. If a person comes into contact with a live wire, use a non-conductive material to separate the person from the electrical source. Use a wooden broom handle, a wooden chair, or a dry towel or sheet. Rubber or insulated gloves offer no protection. 5. Avoid direct contact with the skin of the victim or any conductive material touching it until he or she is disconnected. You may be shocked also. 6. Check the pulse and begin rescue breathing and CPR if necessary. Chapter 2, The Best Defense. How to Survive a Poisonous Snake Attack. Because poisonous snakes can be difficult to identify, and because some non-poisonous snakes have markings very similar to venomous ones, the best way to avoid getting bitten is to leave all snakes alone. Assume that a snake is venomous unless you know for certain that it is not. How to treat a bite. 1. Wash the bite with soap and water as soon as you can. 2. Immobilize the bitten area and keep it lower than the heart. This will slow the flow of venom. 3. Get medical help as soon as possible. A doctor should treat all snake bites unless you are willing to bet your life that the offending snake is non-poisonous. Of about 8,000 venomous bites a year in the United States, 9 to 15 victims are killed. A bite from any type of poisonous snake should always be considered a medical emergency. Even bites from non-poisonous snakes should be treated professionally, as severe allergic reactions can occur. Some Mojave rattlesnakes carry a neurotoxic venom that can affect the brain or spinal cord, causing paralysis. 4. Immediately wrap a bandage tightly 2 to 4 inches above the bite to help slow the venom if you are unable to reach medical care within 30 minutes. The bandage should not cut off blood flow from a vein or artery. Make the bandage loose enough for a finger to slip underneath. 5. If you have a first aid kit equipped with a suction device, follow the instructions for helping to draw venom out of the wound without making an incision. Generally, you will need to place the rubber suction cup over the wound and attempt to draw the venom out from the bite marks. What not to do. Do not place any ice or cooling element on the bite. This will make removing the venom with suction more difficult. Do not tie a bandage or a tourniquet too tightly. If used incorrectly, a tourniquet can cut blood flow completely and damage the limb. Do not make any incision on or around the wound in an attempt to remove the venom. There is danger of infection. Do not attempt to suck out the venom. You do not want it in your mouth, where it might enter your bloodstream. How to escape from a python. Unlike poisonous snakes, pythons and boas kill their prey not through injection of venom, but by constriction. Hence, these snakes are known as constrictors. A constrictor coils its body around its prey, squeezing it until the pressure is great enough to kill. Since pythons and boas can grow to be nearly 20 feet long, they are fully capable of killing a grown person, and small children are even more vulnerable. The good news is that most pythons will strike and then try to get away, rather than consume a full-grown human. 1. Remain still. This will minimize constriction strength, but a python usually continues constricting well after the prey is dead and not moving. 2. Try to control the python's head and try to unwrap the coils, starting from whichever end is available. How to avoid an attack. Do not try to get a closer look, prod the snake to make it move, or try to kill it. If you come across the snake, back away slowly and give it a wide berth. Snakes can easily strike half their body length in an instant, and some species are 6 feet or longer. When hiking in an area with poisonous snakes, always wear thick leather boots and long pants. Keep to marked trails. Snakes are cold-blooded and need the sun to help regulate their body temperature. They are often found lying on warm rocks and in other sunny places. How to fend off a shark. 1. Hit back. If a shark is coming towards you or attacks you, use anything you have in your possession, a camera, probe, harpoon gun, your fist, to hit the shark's eyes or gills, which are the areas most sensitive to pain. 2. Make quick, sharp, repeated jabs in these areas. Sharks are predators and will usually only follow through on an attack if they have the advantage. So make the shark unsure of its advantage in any way possible. That will increase your chances of survival. Contrary to popular opinion, the shark's nose is not the area to attack, unless you cannot reach the eyes or gills. Hitting the shark simply tells it that you are not defenseless. How to avoid an attack? Always stay in groups. Sharks are more likely to attack an individual. Do not wander too far from shore. This isolates you and creates the additional danger of being too far from assistance. Avoid being in the water during darkness or twilight hours when sharks are most active and have a competitive sensory advantage. Do not enter the water if you are bleeding from an open wound or if you are menstruating. A shark is drawn to blood, and its olfactory ability is acute. Try not to wear shiny jewelry because its reflected light resembles the sheen of fish scales. Avoid waters with known effluents or sewage and those being used by sport or commercial fishermen, especially if there are signs of bait fish or feeding activity. Diving seabirds are good indicators of such activity. Use extra caution when waters are murky and avoid showing any uneven tan lines or wearing brightly colored clothing. Sharks see contrast particularly well. If a shark shows itself to you, it may be curious rather than predatory and will probably swim on and leave you alone. If you are under the surface and lucky enough to see an attacking shark, then you do have a good chance of defending yourself if the shark is not too large. Scuba divers should avoid lying on the surface, where they may look like a piece of prey to a shark, and from where they cannot see a shark approaching. A shark attack is a potential danger for anyone who frequents marine waters, but it should be kept in perspective. Bees, wasps, and snakes are responsible for far more fatalities each year. And in the United States, the annual risk of death from lightning is 30 times greater than that from a shark attack. Three kinds of shark attacks. Hit-and-run attacks are by far the most common. These typically occur in the surf zone, where swimmers and surfers are the targets. The victim seldom sees its attacker, and the shark does not return after inflicting a single bite or a slash wound. Bump-and-bite attacks are characterized by the shark initially circling and often bumping the victim prior to the actual attack. These types of attacks usually involve divers or swimmers in deeper waters, but also occur in near-shore shallows in some areas of the world. Sneak attacks differ. The strike can occur without warning. With both bump-and-bite and sneak attacks, repeat attacks are common and multiple and sustained bites are the norm. Injuries incurred during this type of attack are usually quite severe, frequently resulting in death. Be aware. Most shark attacks occur in near-shore waters, typically inshore of a sandbar or between sandbars where sharks can feed and can become trapped at low tide. Areas with steep drop-offs are also likely attack sites. Sharks congregate in these areas because their natural prey congregates there. Almost any large shark, roughly 6 feet or longer in total length, is a potential threat to humans. But three species in particular have repeatedly attacked man. The white shark, Carcharodon carcharias. The tiger shark, Galeosardu suvieri. The bull shark, Carcharinus leucus. All are cosmopolitan in distribution, reach large sizes, and consume large prey such as marine mammals, sea turtles, and fish as normal elements of their diets. How to escape from a bear. 1. Lie still and quiet. Documented attacks show that an attack by a mother black bear often ends when a person stops fighting. 2. Stay where you are and do not climb a tree to escape a bear. Black bears can climb trees quickly and easily and will come after you. The odds are that the bear will leave you alone if you stay put. 3. If you are lying still and the bear attacks, strike back with anything you can. Go for the bear's eyes or its snout. What to do if you see a bear? Make your presence known by talking loudly, clapping, singing, or occasionally calling out. Some people prefer to wear bells. Whatever you do, be heard. It does not pay to surprise a bear. Remember, bears can run much faster than humans. Keep children close at hand and within sight. There is no guaranteed minimum safe distance from a bear. The further, the better. If you are in a car, remain in your vehicle. Do not get out, even for a quick photo. Keep your windows up. Do not impede the bear from crossing the road. How to avoid an attack? Reduce or eliminate food odors from yourself, your camp, your clothes, and your vehicle. Do not sleep in the same clothes you cook in. Store food so that bears cannot smell or reach it. Do not keep food in your tent, not even a chocolate bar. Properly store and bring out all garbage. Handle and store pet food with as much care as your own. While all bears should be considered dangerous and should be avoided, three types should be regarded as more dangerous than the average bear. They are females defending cubs, bears habituated to human food, bears defending a fresh kill. Be aware, there are about 650,000 black bears in North America, and only one person every 3 years is killed by a bear, although there are hundreds of thousands of encounters. Most bears in the continental U.S. are black bears. But black bears are not always black in color. Sometimes their fur is brown or blonde. Males are generally bigger than females, 125 to 500 pounds for males, 90 to 300 pounds for females. Bears can run as fast as horses, uphill or downhill. Bears can climb trees, although black bears are better tree climbers than grizzly bears. Bears have excellent senses of smell and hearing. Bears are extremely strong. They can tear cars apart looking for food. Every bear defends a personal space. The extent of this space will vary with each bear and each situation. It may be a few meters or a few hundred meters. Intrusion into this space is considered a threat and may provoke an attack. Bears aggressively defend their food. All female bears defend their cubs. If a female with cubs is surprised at close range or is separated from her cubs, she may attack. An aggressive reaction to any danger to her cubs is a mother grizzly's natural defense. A female black bear's natural defense is to chase her cubs up a tree and defend them from the base. Stay away from dead animals. Bears may attack to defend such food. It is best not to hike with dogs, as dogs can antagonize bears and cause an attack. An unleashed dog may even bring a bear back to you. How to escape from a mountain lion. 1. Do not run. The animal most likely will have seen and smelled you already, and running will simply cause it to pay more attention. 2. Try to make yourself appear bigger by opening your coat wide. The mountain lion is less likely to attack a larger animal. 3. Do not crouch down. Hold your ground. Wave your hands. Shout. Show it that you are not defenseless. 4. If you have small children with you, pick them up. Do all you can to appear larger. Children who move quickly and have high-pitched voices are at higher risk than adults. 5. Back away slowly or wait until the animal moves away. Report any lion sightings to authorities as soon as possible. 6. If the lion still behaves aggressively, throw stones. Convince the lion that you are not prey and that you may be dangerous yourself. 7. Fight back if you are attacked. Most mountain lions are small enough that an average-sized human can be able to ward off an attack by fighting back aggressively. Hit the mountain lion in the head, especially around the eyes and the mouth. Use sticks, fists, or whatever is at hand. Do not curl up and play dead. Mountain lions generally leap down upon prey from above and deliver a killing bite to the back of the neck. Their technique is to break the neck and knock down the prey, and they also will rush and lunge up at the neck of the prey, dragging the victim down while holding the neck in a crushing grip. Protect your neck and your throat at all cost. How to avoid an attack. Mountain lions, also called cougars, have been known to attack people without provocation. Aggressive ones have attacked hikers and especially small children, resulting in serious injury. Still, most mountain lions will avoid people. To minimize your contact with cougars in an area inhabited by them, avoid hiking alone and at dusk and dawn when mountain lions are more active. How to wrestle free from an alligator. 1. If you are on land, try to get on the alligator's back and put downward pressure on its neck. This will force its head and jaws down. 2. Cover the alligator's eyes. This will usually make it more sedate. 3. If you are attacked, go for the eyes and nose. Use any weapons you have or your fist. 4. If its jaws are closed on something you want to remove, for example, a limb, tap or punch it on the snout. Alligators often open their mouths when tapped lightly. They may drop whatever it is that they have taken hold of and back off. 5. If the alligator gets you in its jaws, you must prevent it from shaking you or rolling over. These instinctual actions cause severe tissue damage. Try to keep the mouth clamped shut so the alligator does not begin shaking. 6. Seek medical attention immediately, even for a small cut or bruise, to treat infection. Alligators have a large number of pathogens in their mouths. How to avoid an attack. While deaths in the United States from alligator attacks are rare, there are thousands of attacks and hundreds of fatalities from Nile crocodiles in Africa and Indo-Pacific crocodiles in Asia and Australia. A few tips to keep in mind. Do not swim or wade in areas alligators are known to inhabit. In Florida, this can be anywhere. Do not swim or wade alone, and always check out the area before venturing in. Never feed alligators. Do not dangle arms and legs from boats, and avoid throwing unused bait or fish from a boat or dock. Do not harass, try to touch, or capture any alligator. Leave babies and eggs alone. Any adult alligator will respond to distress calls from any youngster. Mother alligators, guarding nests and babies, will defend them. In most cases, the attacking alligators had been fed by humans prior to the attack. This is an important link. Feeding alligators seems to cause them to lose their fear of humans and become more aggressive. How to escape from killer bees. 1. If bees begin flying around you or stinging you, do not freeze. Run away. Swatting at the bees only makes them angrier. 2. Get indoors as fast as you can. 3. If no shelter is available, run through bushes or high weeds. That will help give you cover. 4. If a bee stings you, it will leave its stinger in your skin. Remove the stinger by raking your fingernails across it in a sideways motion. Do not pinch or pull the stinger out. This may squeeze more venom from the stinger into your body. Do not let stingers remain in the skin, because venom can continue to pump into the body for up to 10 minutes. 5. Do not jump into a swimming pool or other body of water. The bees are likely to be waiting for you when you surface. Risk of attack. The Africanized honeybee is a cousin of the run-of-the-mill domesticated honeybee that has lived in the United States for centuries. The killer bee moniker was created after some magazine reports about several deaths that resulted from the Africanized bee stings some years back. Africanized honeybees are considered wild. They are easily angered by animals and people, and likely to become aggressive. Bees swarm most often in the spring and fall. This is when the entire colony moves to establish a new hive. They may move in large masses, called swarms, until they find a suitable spot. Once the colony is built and the bees begin raising their young, they will protect their hive by stinging. While any colony of bees will defend its hive, Africanized bees do so with gusto. These bees can kill, and they present a danger even to those who are not allergic to bee stings. In several isolated instances, people and animals have been stung to death. Regular honeybees will chase you about 50 yards. Africanized honeybees may pursue you 3 times that distance. Most often, death from stings occurs when people are not able to get away from the bees quickly. Animal losses have occurred for the same reasons. Pets and livestock were tied up or penned when they encountered the bees and could not escape. To minimize risk, avoid colonies by filling in holes or cracks in exterior walls, filling in tree cavities, and putting screens on the tops of rain spouts and over water meter boxes in the ground. Do not bother bee colonies. If you see that bees are building or have already built a colony around your home, do not disturb them. Call a pest control center to find out who removes bees. How to deal with a charging bull. 1. Do not antagonize the bull and do not move. Bulls will generally leave humans alone unless they become angry. 2. Look around for a safe haven, an escape route, cover, or high ground. Running away is not likely to help unless you find an open door, a fence to jump, or another safe haven. Bulls can easily outrun humans. If you can reach a safe spot, make a run for it. 3. If a safe haven is not available, remove your shirt, hat, or another article of clothing. Use this to distract the bull. It does not matter what color the clothing is. Despite the colors bullfighters traditionally use, bulls do not naturally head for red. They react to and move towards movement, not color. 4. If the bull charges, remain still and then throw your shirt or hat away from you. The bull should head towards the object you've thrown. If you encounter a stampede of bulls or cattle, do not try to distract them. Try to determine where they are headed and then get out of the way. If you cannot escape, your only option is to run alongside the stampede to avoid being trampled. Bulls are not like horses. They will not avoid you if you lie down, so keep moving. How to win a sword fight. Always keep your sword in the ready position, held in front of you with both hands and perpendicular to the ground. With this method, you can move the sword side to side and up and down easily, blocking and landing blows in all directions by moving your arms. Hold the tip of the sword at a bit of an angle, with the tip pointed slightly towards your opponent. Picture a doorway. You should be able to move your sword in any direction and quickly hit any edge of the doorframe. How to deflect and counter a blow. 1. Step up and into the blow with your arms held against your body. React quickly and against your instincts, which will tell you to move back and away. By moving closer, you can cut off a blow's power. Avoid extending your arms, which would make your own counterblow less powerful. 2. Push or punch at the blow instead of simply trying to absorb it with your own sword. If a blow is aimed at your head, move your sword completely parallel to the ground and above your head. Block with the center of your sword and not the end. Always move out towards your opponent, even if you are defending and not attacking. How to attack. 1. Move the sword in steady, quick blows up and down and to the left and right. Assuming you must disable your attacker, do not try to stab with your sword. A stabbing motion will put you off balance, will leave your sword far out in front of you, making you vulnerable to a counterblow. 2. Do not raise the sword up behind your head or try a huge blow. You will end up with the sword in your gut. 3. Hold your position, punch out to defend, and strike quickly. 4. Wait for your attacker to make a mistake. Stepping into a blow or deflecting it to the side will put him or her off balance. Once your opponent is off balance, you can take advantage of their moment of weakness by landing a disabling blow, remembering not to jab with your sword, but to strike up and down or from side to side. How to take a punch. A blow to the body. 1. Tighten your stomach muscles. A body blow to the gut, the solar plexus, can damage organs and kill. This sort of punch is one of the best and easiest ways to knock someone out. Harry Houdini died from an unexpected blow to the abdomen. 2. Do not suck in your stomach if you expect that a punch is imminent. 3. If possible, shift slightly so that the blow hits your side, but do not flinch or move away from the punch. Try to absorb the blow with your obliques, This is the set of muscles on your side that wraps around your ribs. While a blow to this area may crack a rib, it is less likely to do damage to internal organs. A blow to the head. 1. Move towards the blow, not away from it. Getting punched while moving backwards will result in the head taking the punch at full force. A punch to the face can cause head whipping, where the brain moves suddenly inside the skull, and may result in severe injury or death. 2. Tighten your neck muscles and clench your jaw to avoid scraping the upper and lower palates. A straight punch. 1. The straight punch. One that comes straight at your face should be countered by moving towards the blow. This will take force from the blow. 2. A punch can be absorbed more effectively and with the least injury by the forehead. Avoid taking the punch in the nose, which is extremely painful. 3. Attempt to deflect the blow with an arm. Moving into the punch may result in your attacker missing the mark wide or to either side. 4. Optional. Hit back with an uppercut or a roundhouse. A roundhouse punch. 1. Clench your jaw. A punch to the ear causes great pain and can break your jaw. 2. Move in close to your attacker. Try to make the punch land harmlessly behind your head. 3. Optional. Hit back with an uppercut. An uppercut. 1. Clench your neck and jaw. An uppercut can cause much damage, whipping your head back, easily breaking your jaw or your nose. 2. Use your arm to absorb some of the impact or deflect the blow to the side. Anything to minimize the impact of a straight punch to the jaw. 3. Do not step into this punch. If possible, move your head to the side. 4. Optional. Hit back with a straight punch to the face or with an uppercut of your own. Chapter 3. Leaps of Faith. How to jump from a bridge or cliff into a river. When attempting a high fall over 20 feet into water in an emergency situation, you will not know much about your surroundings, specifically the depth of the water. This makes jumping particularly dangerous. If jumping from a bridge into a river or other body of water with boat traffic, try to land in the channel, the deep water area where boats go under the bridge. This area is generally in the center, away from the shoreline. Stay away from any area with pylons that are supporting the bridge. Debris can collect in these areas, and you can hit it when you enter the water. Swim to shore immediately after surfacing. How to jump. 1. Jump feet first. 2. Keep your body completely vertical. 3. Squeeze your feet together. 4. Enter the water feet first and clench your buttocks together. If you do not, water may rush in and cause severe internal damage. 5. Protect your crotch area by covering it with your hands. 6. Immediately after you hit the water, spread your arms and legs wide and move them back and forth to generate resistance, which will slow your plunge to the bottom. Always assume the water is not deep enough to keep you from hitting bottom. Be aware. Hitting the water as described above could save your life, although it may break your legs. If your body is not straight, you can break your back upon entry. Keep yourself vertical until you hit the water. Do not even think about going in head first unless you are absolutely sure that the water is at least 20 feet deep. If your legs hit the bottom, they will break. If your head hits, your skull will break. How to jump from a building into a dumpster. How to jump. 1. Jump straight down. If you leap off and away from the building at an angle, your trajectory will make you miss the dumpster. Resist your natural tendency to push off. 2. Tuck your head and bring your legs around. To do this during the fall, execute a three-quarter revolution, basically a not-quite-full somersault. This is the only method that will allow a proper landing with your back facing down. 3. Aim for the center of the dumpster or large box of debris. 4. Land flat on your back so that when your body folds, your feet and your hands meet. When your body hits any surface from a significant height, the body folds into a V. This means landing on your stomach can result in a broken back. Be aware. If the building has fire escapes or other protrusions, your leap will have to be far enough out so you miss them on your way down. The landing target needs to be far enough from the building for you to hit it. The dumpster may be filled with bricks or other unfriendly materials. It is entirely possible to survive a high fall, 5 stories or more, into a dumpster, provided it is filled with the right type of trash. Cardboard boxes are best, and you land correctly. How to maneuver on top of a moving train and get inside. 1. Do not try to stand up straight. You probably will not be able to anyway. Stay bent slightly forward, leaning into the wind. If the train is moving faster than 30 miles per hour, it will be difficult to maintain your balance and resist the wind. So crawling on all fours may be the best method until you can get down. 2. If the train is approaching a turn, lie flat. Do not try to keep your footing. The car may have guide rails along the edge to direct water. If it does, grab them and hold on. 3. If the train is approaching a tunnel entrance, lie flat and quickly. There is actually quite a bit of clearance between the top of the train and the top of the tunnel, about 3 feet, but not nearly enough room to stand. Do not assume that you can walk or crawl to the end of the car to get down and inside before you reach the tunnel. You probably won't. 4. Move your body with the rhythm of the train, from side to side and forward. Do not proceed in a straight line. Spread your feet apart about 36 inches and wobble from side to side as you move forward. 5. Find the ladder at the end of the car, between two cars, and climb down. It is very unlikely that there will be a ladder on the side of the car. They usually appear only in the movies to make the stunts more exciting. Be aware. The sizes and shapes of the cars on a freight train may vary widely. This can either make it easier or significantly more difficult to cross from one car to another. A 12-foot-high boxcar may be next to a flatbed or a rounded Kym car. If on this type of train, your best bet is to get down as quickly as possible, rather than to try a dangerous leap from car to car. How to jump from a moving car. Hurling yourself from a moving car should be a last resort. For example, if your brakes are defective and your car is about to head off a cliff or into a train. 1. Apply the emergency brake. This may not stop the car, but it might slow it down enough to make jumping safer. 2. Open the car door. 3. Make sure you jump at an angle that will take you out of the path of the car. Since your body will be moving at the same velocity as the car, you're going to continue to move in the direction the car is moving. If the car is going straight, try to jump at an angle that will take you away from it. 4. Tuck in your head and your arms and legs. 5. Aim for a soft landing site. Grass, brush, wood chips, anything but pavement, or a tree. Stunt people wear pads and land in sand pits if they can. You won't have that luxury, but anything that gives a bit when the body hits it will minimize injury. 6. Roll when you hit the ground. How to leap from a motorcycle to a car. If you are planning to enter the car through one of its windows, remember that in many newer cars, only the front windows roll all the way down. You should attempt to be on the front passenger side. 1. Wear a high-quality helmet and a leather jacket plus leather pants and boots. 2. Make sure both vehicles are moving at the same speed. The slower the speed, the safer the move. Anything faster than 60 miles per hour is extremely dangerous. 3. Wait for a long, straight section of road. 4. Get the vehicles as close as possible to each other. You will be on the passenger side of the car, so you will be very close to the edge of the roadway. Be careful not to swerve. 5. Stand crouched with both your feet on either the running board or the seat. 6. Hold the throttle until the last instant. Remember, as soon as you release the throttle, the bike speed will decrease. 7. If the car has a handle inside, above the door, grab it with your free hand. If not, simply time the leap so your torso lands in the car. If someone can grab you and pull you in, all the better. 8. Have the driver swerve away from the bike as soon as you are inside. Once you have released the handlebars, the bike will go out of control and crash. It may also slip under the rear passenger side wheel of the car. 9. If you miss the window, tuck and roll away from the vehicle. Be aware, the move is much easier if two people are on the motorcycle, so the non-jumper can continue driving. In the movies and in stunt shows, these transfers are usually performed at slow speeds, and in fact, often employ the use of a metal step installed on one side of the bike or car, which allows the rider to step off while keeping the bike balanced. You are not likely to have this option. Chapter 4. Emergencies. How to perform a tracheotomy. This procedure, technically called a cricothyroidotomy, should be undertaken only when a person with a throat obstruction is not able to breathe at all, no gasping sounds, no coughing, and only after you have attempted to perform the Heimlich maneuver 3 times without dislodging the obstruction. If possible, someone should call for paramedics while you proceed. What you will need: a first aid kit, if available, a razor blade or very sharp knife, a straw, 2 would be better, or a ballpoint pen with the inside ink-filled tube removed. If neither a straw nor a pen is available, use stiff paper or cardboard rolled into a tube. Good first aid kits may contain trach tubes. There will not be time for sterilization of your tools, so do not bother. Infection is the least of your worries at this point. How to proceed? 1. Find the person's Adam's apple, thyroid cartilage. 2. Move your finger about 1 inch down the neck until you feel another bulge. This is the cricoid cartilage. The indentation between the two is the cricothyroid membrane, where the incision will be made. 3. Take the razor blade or knife and make a half-inch horizontal incision. The cut should be about a half an inch deep. There should not be too much blood. 4. Pinch the incision open or place your finger inside the slit to open it. 5. Insert your tube in the incision roughly 1/2 to 1 inch deep. 6. Breathe into the tube with 2 quick breaths. Pause 5 seconds, then give 1 breath every 5 seconds. 7. You will see the chest rise and the person should regain consciousness if you have performed the procedure correctly. The person should be able to breathe on their own, albeit with some difficulty, until help arrives. How to use a defibrillator to restore a heartbeat. Defibrillation is the delivery of a powerful electrical shock to the heart. The defibrillator is a device used in movies and TV shows. Two handheld pads are placed on the victim's chest while an actor yells, "Clear!" In the past, defibrillators were very heavy, expensive, needed regular maintenance, and were mostly found only in hospitals. Now there are more portable units available. A defibrillator should be used only for a sudden cardiac arrest, SCA, an electrical problem that cannot be helped by CPR. How to use a defibrillator. 1. Turn on the defibrillator by pressing the green button. Most machines will provide both visual and voice prompts. 2. First, remove the person's shirt and jewelry, then apply the pads to the chest as shown in the diagram displayed on the machine's LED panel. One pad should be placed on the upper right side of the chest, one on the lower left. 3. Plug the pads into the connector. The defibrillator will analyze the patient and determine if he needs a shock. Do not touch the patient at this time. 4. If the machine determines that a shock is needed, it will direct you, both audibly and with visual prompts, to press the orange button to deliver a shock. Do not touch the patient after pressing the button. The machine will automatically check to see whether or not the patient needs a second shock, and if so, will direct you to press the orange button again. 5. Check the patient's airway, breathing, and pulse. If there is a pulse, but the patient is not breathing, begin mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. If there is no pulse, repeat the defibrillation process. Be aware, a defibrillator should be used for a person experiencing sudden cardiac arrest, SCA, a condition where heart's electrical signals become confused and the heart ceases to function. A person experiencing SCA will stop breathing. The pulse will slow or stop and consciousness will be lost. How to identify a bomb. Letter and package bombs can be very dangerous and destructive. However, unlike a bomb that goes off suddenly and with no warning, they can be identified. Observe the following procedures and warning signs. How to detect a letter bomb. 1. If a carrier delivers an unexpected bulky letter or parcel, inspect it for lumps, bulges, or protrusions without applying pressure. Check for unevenly balanced parcels. 2. Handwritten addresses or labels from companies are unusual. Check to see if the company exists and if they sent a package or letter. 3. Be suspicious of packages wrapped in string. Modern packaging materials have eliminated the need for twine or string. 4. Watch out for excess postage on small packages or letters. This indicates that the object was not weighed by the post office. It is no longer legal to mail stamped parcels weighing more than 16 ounces at mailboxes in the United States. They must be taken to the post office. 5. Watch out for leaks, stains, especially oil stains, protruding wires, or excessive tape. 6. Watch out for articles with no return address or a nonsensical return address. How to search for a bomb. Government agencies use well-defined search procedures for bombs and explosive devices. After a bomb threat, the following can be used as a guide for searching a room using a two-person search team. 1. Divide the area and select a search height. The first searching sweep should cover all items resting on the floor up to the height of furniture. Subsequent sweeps should move up from there. 2. Start back to back and work around the room in opposite directions, moving towards each other. 3. Search around the walls and proceed inward in concentric circles towards the center of the room. 4. If you find a suspicious parcel or device, do not touch it. Call the bomb squad.